Bill.
Hi there, how are ya?
Good.
Good.
Missed ya, I went in and paid my.
I know, I got your file after it was done, I was like, aw, shoot, I didn't even hear you up there.
All in order, of course.
Yeah, it looked great, good job, you got a gold star.
Well, there was something wrong with that photo of them.
Oh, well, yeah.
A little higher than last year.
Yes, it was.
I tried to put you in a small one split.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get you.
You can start whenever you're ready.
Okay, we'll call this meeting order, this is the regular commission meeting for the Port of Brookings Harbor Commission, Wednesday, December 20th, 2022. If you join me in the pledge of allegiance, please.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, Steve, Danielle?
Larry?
Here.
Dan?
Here.
Sharon?
Here.
Richard?
Here.
Joe is absent.
Joe is fishing.
He is fishing.
Are there any modifications, additions, or changes to the agenda?
Yes. Action item F, the HMGP standard form 424D.
Okay. Any others? Anybody need to declare a potential conflict of interest?
No.
No.
All right, I entertain a motion to approve the amended agenda.
Motion to approve the amended agenda.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion to second, Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes.
Moves us to the approval of meeting minutes from the regular commission meeting on November 15th and the special commission meeting on November 30th. Any comments, changes, edits?
Motion to approve minutes to both Wednesday, November 15th and Thursday, November 30th meetings.
Second.
Motion of second, Sharon? Oh, Sharon. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes.
I see no public comment forms in front of me, do you have any?
I did not receive. I did not receive any public comments.
Okay. All right, that brings us to the management and financial reports.
Okay, RV park, staff replaced the walkway up to the RV park office. The new walkway will improve access for customers and provide a better location for the self-check-in area. Beach walkway blocks will be installed periodically throughout the winter. When the port receives weather notices impacting beaches, we will post the notices on our website. The blocks will be removed after the advisories have been lifted. Marina, staff conducted our third water testing for our 1200Z stormwater permit. Results showed only one fail in the boatyard for copper. We hope that we will be able to further reduce that number when we add our oil water separator in the spring and paving, hopefully sometime in late 2024. Travel lift maintenance was completed. All items called out in the annual inspection have been replaced and documented. Staff made numerous trips in the work boat to remove log debris out of both basins. Boat launches were kind of in track with the previous years. Equipment services performed by staff, telehandler work, we did 9 jobs. Travel lift haul outs, we did 6. Commercial receiving docks are all operational. With the Pacific Seafood Dock, we ordered steel plates and we'll keep periodically putting them on as time allows. Commercial retail building gutters and drainage were checked and cleaned out around the retail shop buildings. Staff began work on the north end of the boardwalk. Decking and bolts were removed and staff were able to pull it back into place. EMC will be out in early December to look at what we did and give an update opinion on moving forward. With that being said, Jack was out. He did look at it. We'll continue to monitor the shoring, keep pulling away, but we have redecked it and we're going to put up the new handrail and we will keep it open. We'll open it back up for as long as possible. We'll keep monitoring and once that the beam is bearing on that piling, probably only 3 inches, is probably when we'll stop and try and conduct a new plan or further decide what we're going to do. But I would imagine for the summer, it should be open.
Travis, just out of curiosity, how much of that, do we have an idea how much that has moved a year or just that, the, in regards to coming off that piling?
It's moved a lot. The farthest number, I think, out was 13 inches that it had moved over.
Well, let me remember. What I'm trying to get at is with the pilings moved out, I was leaning out and it was probably starting to push. We don't have an idea of how much the underpinnings are moving by themselves without the whole dock in place. Is what I'm trying to get at.
Is that's moving out at a rate of about a quarter inch per rainstorm.
Okay. Okay.
That's about what we've averaged it out. It still moves. We put a mark on there so we can see as it keeps growing. But it's about a quarter inch per rainstorm it wants to keep pushing out.
Thank you.
Maintenance crew completed 112 work orders throughout the month of November. Their work orders are attached. Office staff had 24 mortgage renewals, and their daily task sheets are attached. Report received for a FEMA. So this one is pretty important. Court received notice of a reimbursement for pay requests 2 and 3. All expenditures were approved for the exception of the erosion control work that was done by McClellan. FEMA stated that the work was not identified in the approved scope of work. When the port moved the sediment basin closer to the fuel dock, the extra work for the discharge area was not updated. We provided an explanation of why the change happened and the extra work it entails, along with an explanation from EMC for the need. FEMA has rejected the extra work. And coupled with that, we are, our program representative also spoke with FEMA, and FEMA stated that their position that this action in the sediment construction is permanent work, and permanent work was denied due to past maintenance. That goes hand in hand with when we lost the funding for the west side slopes when the storm happened. That was not coupled with this project due to lack of path maintenance. So unfortunately, the port will be footing the bill for that. The work will come out of our repairs and maintenance fund. At the end of the day, the bank was failing. It really needed to be replaced anyways, and our hope was that FEMA was going to pay for it. Ultimately, they didn't, so we need to accept it, I guess, and move on with what we're doing. But the repairs and maintenance will cover it, and it's still allowed it for in our budget. Okay. Is there any questions on that?
I have questions. I'm just gritting my teeth with all this.
It's a difficult position with FEMA. FEMA is to put things back to the original. So if you already have things that are collapsed and broken, it makes it really hard to put them back. And most of the time, FEMA will deny anything due to past maintenance.
Well, the reason I just bit my teeth is because some of that has occurred since the incident that we are claiming the issue for. So it's kind of like you're getting dinged for something that happened because you didn't maintain it because you had a file claim with FEMA.
Right.
And it's like a circular argument to me.
And it also, you know, the last, I think it was November last year, we had a pretty significant storm, and FEMA was out. We logged, we took pictures of all the damage. We did our whole walkthrough with FEMA and gave them engineered estimates. And as all they took down as what they would repair are the individual sections where it actually slid. So even though the whole bank had, you know, continues to erode, they were only going to provide funding for that section that actually slid during that storm on that day. So when I fill out that paperwork, I considered the whole bank and chopped it by like 70%, saying they weren't going to repair all that. And then ultimately, you know, they don't repair things like that. So.
Moral of the story is don't buy a trailer park in Mississippi. If it blows away, you won't get paid for it.
So that's where that's been. Yes.
I was going to ask Travis, did you talk to FEMA about taking on more than what they were going to pay for? Or I don't know how that conversation went, but I will ask you this, though. Did that hurt your relationship? Did the report hurt its relationship with FEMA?
No.
Okay.
No. Not at all.
Okay.
It's kind of hard to have a relationship when you get a new person every week, you know. So.
Yeah, but still, I mean, it's all.
No, we didn't hurt it with FEMA. FEMA has been out here multiple times. They're very well aware of what happens here at the port. And, you know, they're very good at just saying no, and that's why. And they will leave it at that. And it's just rules we got to play by. So, wastewater treatment plant phase two funding is still under review. We received a couple questions back regarding stormwater infrastructure and operating procedures that we currently have. Those questions were answered and returned. We are still waiting to have further conversation with PAC Seafood regarding matching funds. I anticipate we will talk more with them after the first of the year. My last conversation that I had with them, they said that they were embarking on conversations with DEQ, and they were in the middle of doing their budgets, and that they were going to put it in for their budgeting, and they hope to hear back after the first of the year on moving forward with that. Our phase two funding, I expect to be somewhere at the same time, and at the same time, Jack is starting to develop the RFP that I'll bring back to you guys for approval before we send that out. Hopefully all that RFP can go out, we'll have matching funds secured and our phase two funding somewhere all at the same time. That's all I have for my report. Any questions?
All right. My safety, security, and environmental report. Port Leavens discussed storm and dock safety. For incidences for the month of November, we only have 5. Four aces in the port recorded 18 security issues for the month of November, and we did our third of 4 required stormwater testing for our DEQ. That's all I have.
Any questions? I'd answer some.
Okay, for the month of November 2023, our unrestricted cash and equivalents totaled $377,915. Our restricted cash and equivalents totaled $284,691. Our total checking and savings is currently at $662,606. Our total revenue for all funds was $453,421, with our total expenses at $459,780. So our net income for November was a negative $6,359. At this time, we are at total income for all funds 19.7%, with general fund revenues at 38.1%. Total expenditures for all funds is at 20.3%, with general fund expenditures at 37.1%. A couple things to note, we did receive $9,119 in a maintenance assistance grant this month. We also did get our payment from the USDA for the Smith River fire crew that used our RV park. I paid the USDA revenue bond this month. And then we received notice from our auditor that she is very busy and unable to complete our audit by the end of the year. So I did put in a request for an extension, and that was approved through March 31st. I have begun looking around for possibly a new auditor for next year, because of the amount of things that she has going on. She didn't want to do it this year, and now it's going to be wait. I'm going to see if I can find somebody else for next year.
They're very difficult to find.
Very difficult.
Very.
Well, I recall when we got her laptop.
Yeah.
Already looked.
And there's even fewer of them now, so we're actively looking for somebody that's willing to take on the portability. More to come on that.
Any questions? Good job.
All right. Entertain a motion to approve manager's report.
Motion to approve the manager's report.
And the financial report.
And the financial report.
And the safety report.
Okay. Motion and second, Danielle.
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Okay. Bring us to action items. Report manager contact.
Okay, so all of you guys should have been given the contract. It came in yesterday afternoon. So the overview, the current port manager employment agreement began December 1st, 2022 for 1 year. Four employment reviews were held quarterly throughout the year. The port has continued to make positive progress throughout the year term. The current agreement in front of you is for a 5-year term. Any questions, comments?
I have one. Okay. So under 4.1, we're talking about base salary.
Right.
And you're talking about a base salary increase of 3.5% each December 1st. Is that like a cost of living? Is that what that's intended to be?
Yeah.
But we're not capped with that.
No. No, it does go over here that the employee may be entitled to additional increase in his base salary to be determined in the sole discretion of the board based on employee's progress.
Okay.
In achieving goals and approved by the board and his progress in general.
Okay. Any other questions?
No, I think it was covered.
It's very similar to the original one that I had.
I have some concern.
Okay.
Travis, please do not take this personal.
Nope.
In my 27, 28 years, I've never seen a contract at state employment that was written where you got a pay raise each year. Okay. And even cost of livings isn't written in every year. I've done some checking, and you may get comments from ports from all the way from Eureka to Newport in regards to what they pay their general managers. In so doing, I have to say that those that have responded to my calls, you are underpaid. Okay. I was quite floored when I found out that the general manager at Coos Bay gets $260,000 a year. Hell of a shock. Newport, we're talking $193,000 a year. Rather shocked. Salmon Harbor at Winchester, $122,500 a year. County employee, unlike you. I personally would rather see a flat cost of living of, let's say, 5%, and call it good instead of a renewal 3.5% for the 5 years of each of your 5 years of a contract.
Say that one more.
Instead of you getting 3.5% for each of the 5 years, so basically a 17.5% pay raise for the over the 5 years, you get a flat 5% and we call it good. Or 10%. Not a 3.5% every year. It sounds a little bit nicer, but quite frankly, there's no one that I've seen that I've come in contact with that gets a renewal every year of a 3.5% pay rate increase. And I have a hard time with that. And like I said, it's more directed at your position, not at you. It's not you. It's just that, to me, it seems a little bit extravagant to give it a continuing pay raise every year for that. Give it once and call it good for the contract.
Okay.
So Daniel, you're saying 5% one time?
Correct. In my 28 years at the prison down there, we had multiple contracts ranging anywhere from 3 years, well, there was even a two-year contract that ranged as long as 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
In that time frame, we got a pay raise once during that contract, not a renewal, as I'm going to call it here, of 3.5% every year, which is what's spelled out in the port manager's contract.
Which could be increased.
No.
According, yes.
No, no, in this contract, yes, it can be increased. Correct.
Yes.
Correct.
Yes.
But here we have a contract that gives the port manager's position a 3.5% every year. Nobody else in a contractual language that I'm aware of gets that kind of increase annually. They get a 5% or 10% and that's good for the entire contract, and it's a one-time thing. That we bump his pay up, let's say 10%, but he don't come back next year and get another 10%, and the following year another 10%. We get 10%.
I understand what you're saying, Daniel, but I also think that there's nothing wrong with him getting 3.5% yearly, and the board could increase that with the duties that he does and that where our pay scale is with the other four.
I don't disagree that we're low. I mean, the only one that's below us that I have found or comparable to us is Crescent City. And they pay their port manager $100,000 a year.
And if they run their completely different. Their port's not even like ours.
Oh, we're
busier than they are.
Well, I don't know that we're busier than Crescent City.
Well, we have more things going
That's
on
right.
than they do.
I think the concept here originally is to incentivize the port manager's program.
Right.
And I don't have a great deal of heartburn in it because we're not giving you a COLA that I know.
No.
So I don't see this as much different than that. I don't know what the cost of living adjustment is, but I suspect it was probably not 3%.
Was 6.5% last year. That CPI is falling. You know, I think right now it's at right around 3.5%.
I think that
that's the reason I went with that is because typically every, you know, our rate increases at the port are done by CPI. Our raises for our port employees are usually always based upon CPI. And I originally talked with James about having it at a CPI. So it wasn't just this, you know, a varying number. And he said, he's never done one where the manager is adjusted by a CPI. He said typically it's an annual percentage or a fixed percentage rate. And so I kind of shot in the middle of what typically we have done in the past at 3.5%. That way, whatever it is, you know, the employees could get a little bit more. I could be getting a little bit more in some years, but at 3.5%, given where things are going, that's kind of where I settled that. So
there's two issues here to me. Issue one is performance. Issue two is retention. So, you know, as we discovered when we recruited,
right.
The pool for port managers is that deep. So to provide a regular adjustment, I think it's fair. It is at least some compensation that you're getting to offset the cost of living. Retention, on the other hand, I think as you build tenure and experience and broaden your portfolio, then we need to also have a discussion about a performance-based rate, but that's not here yet. And that we can do that as it goes, but that would be coupled with your evaluations and different things.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think the reason that those other ports, of course, you know, Newport's a lot bigger.
Right.
Newport produces $12 million a year through their port. Coos Bay, they deal with the railway that they own between Coos Bay and Eugene.
I think the reason that those salaries are so high is just what I mentioned, retention.
They
worried
deal
about.
To with international.
Yeah. And there is.
At both of those ports, which do yes. drive those costs up. And I have it somewhere. I might have even showed it to you guys one time. There was an assessment that was done over port salaries you know, manager salaries, mm-hmm. different ranges, and they're all over the place.
Oh, they are.
And the way I've worked it down to is what each port has historically done, what they have asked for their managers, and the responsibilities just vary so much. And, you know, another reason, I looked at and I ran the numbers at 3.5% and seeing where that ends up. And if we were talking at 10% now, it would, I think we're only talking a couple $1,000 difference at the five-year term, at the end of the five-year term. I'm not concerned, but I took into consideration what previous port managers have had, where I currently stand. You know, I've been here for a long time, but I've still only been doing this position for a year.
Mm-hmm.
I think over the next 5 years, we'll learn and accomplish a lot more. And at the end of the 5 years, I'm not going to have this huge salary I kind of wanted to put it out to where as it goes on, I'm earning it. It's, you know, it goes up and, you know, a 10% raise right now over 5 years. For me personally, I like looking forward to that raise, you know, instead of, you know, it having to come. So if it's a conversation about what I prefer, I would way prefer a 3.5% than say a 10% raise right now. And given the numbers, it's very small numbers
so
in between.
For me to wrap my pea brain around this, you're looking at this more of an incentive 3.5% step raise type thing instead of a cost of living.
Yeah, I mean,
because as you get more involved in the job and over the course of 5 years, it's kind of a more of a reward, for lack of a better way of putting it.
Yeah. Yeah, and at the end of 5 years, we'll maybe look at something different. I don't know what it's going to look like, but as of right now, I'm going to learn a lot. There's still a lot to do. I'm happy with the amount of money that I'm making. I mean, I think going this way is fair for the port, and I'm happy with it. So that's...
Well, I mean, it brings two questions to mind. One is it easier for the ports financially to absorb as a lump sum, or is it easier to spread it out over a five-year contract?
Spread it out.
Oh, I mean, that's the bottom line.
Spreading it out will be, the port can adjust to it as well. You know, with our rate increases and the things that we do, it kind of washes that cost out, you know, over the term then at once.
Okay.
Anything else?
Thank you for looking into it, though.
You know, like I said, if you get calls, yes, that was me. I called, like I said, everybody that I could between Eureka and Newport to find out.
Thank you for looking into it.
You're welcome. I wanted to make sure that you're getting a fair pay, and that's where I'm at. And I was, like I said, I was rather surprised to see that you're on the bottom end that from those ports that responded to me.
I'm thinking back to last year when we had this discussion at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
and you had done the salary comparisons then,
mm-hmm.
and we were concerned that you weren't making very much.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, you put the number out and said, I'd be comfortable with this, even though it's not enough. It's not comparable because I'm new and I'm not experienced. So I think this moves progressively forward.
Yeah. I mean, with 3.5% at the end of the five, it'll put me at about $110,000. So it does work us into a point where, yes, managers and future managers, you know, will be able to come into this looking at a pay that's comparable to what we're looking at, and the port will have a little bit of time to adjust to paying an employee that much.
Well, if we were to replace managers right now, depending on experience of the person coming, I'd look at 95 as the starting point and do the same thing again. I mean, this just feels like a much more comfortable fit to me. And as a former state employee, I lived COLAs for a long time and would get a raise every 10 years if the legislature felt like it. And those weren't very comfortable situations. And then you know, then of course the state had cough up $1 billion for all the state employees to get a raise. And, anyway. Okay, any further discussion about this? If not, make a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve the contract for the support manager.
I'll second. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Okay, that brings us to the intergovernmental agreement with Curry County.
Okay, so has everybody had a chance to go over it, read it? I think this sets support in a pretty good position from here on out in dealing with any other deposits made. One thing I did do, I updated, I spoke with James about it. I did speak with the director of operations at the county as well, and I felt it to carry a little more weight if the commissioners were involved with this, signed it versus a director of operations and a port manager. For us, the amount of the years that we have dealt with that, and the amount of money and time we've spent on this, that I want this to carry as much weight as it possibly can. So I updated the signature page to include two of our commissioners and the three county commissioners to sign.
I think that better memorializes this and as represented, elected representative of the public, I think that's the appropriate way to go.
Yeah.
As opposed to two department heads. Mm-hmm. You can send memos to each other and agree to stuff, but if you're going to do a formal intergovernmental agreement, then you should.
And we'll also probably next meeting, let me forget, once we have both the signed copies back, we'll do a resolution and kind of seal this up. So.
Okay. Any further discussion? Ready for motion?
Motion to approve the intergovernmental agreement with Curry County.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Action item C, the boatyard shop building layout and size.
Okay, the overview, the current boatyard shop needs to be replaced. The board discussed and approved the port manager to seek design and cost estimates. Included shop building, sorry. So when we discussed this, we were kind of going back and forth about steel buildings, pole barn style buildings. I've done quite a bit of work and we'll talk about that going forward, but attached to it is what I'm getting approval is a design concept of where these are at, where they're going to be stationed tentatively at the boatyard, and that these buildings are going to be pole barn style buildings. Wood frame, metal on the outside, and these locations. So does anybody have any questions, comments? I know I've spoke with some of you about it. The positioning of these might get a little bit tighter by a foot or so because I want to make sure that the travelers can still have access back behind these buildings. The travelers shelter that we're looking at is the big top enclosure, the canvas type top. It's portable, it moves. You will notice that going right through it is where the county easement is for their culvert. But by placing a movable system there, we'll be okay with that. The only other thing that I found with this location is that they might get bumped back just a little bit closer to this dotted line. Coos Curry does have a electrical line that goes from one end of the boatyard to the other. So we're probably going to have to move things back a little bit to avoid that. But we are looking at two pole barn style buildings that are 40 by 60. Those will be the closest out to Lower Harbor Road. I want to do three additional 25-by-40 buildings. All these buildings will have 14-foot roll-up doors, 16-foot tall ceilings. And the last one, the closest one that's shaded brown there, will be the same size as the other building, but FEMA, that will be for the FEMA dredge equipment to be stored in and paid for by FEMA.
Okay, so to be clear right now, we're not approving the construction or purchase of these buildings. We're approving the siting and the concept, and that we're going to go with the whole building.
Yep.
And that allows you then to put that, at least one of those, in your 24-25 budget.
Yep, we'll be looking at our 24-25 budget. My goal with this is for us not to take a loan out. I don't want to do a loan for it. I think our budget can handle the purchase and the construction of these buildings. So that's kind of what we'll be doing, is over 2 or 3 years trying to budget for these and then build them. I think over the three-year cycle, I think the current shop building that we have will keep monitoring things and look, but I don't foresee it falling down, you know, in that time frame. They'll give us a little bit of time to get these built.
Travis, I got a question.
That's why I'm asking.
I know that when we spoke the other day or last week about this, you were talking, you wanted to keep basically the old 3M into the building because it appears to be in the best shape. You want to keep that frontage. So not knowing how far back into the existing shop there is bad, I'm assuming that it'd be probably where Joe's got his from there back?
Probably, yeah.
Seeing how we're crunched for space, would we be better off, and I don't want to delay the storage for the travel lift, but would we be better off flipping travel lift or tearing down and building one of the shops next to the highway, the first one, and then putting Kenny into that and then tearing down his end and putting the travel lift there so that we can slide everything sideways a little bit further to clear the roadway and meet the setback that the county's going to require?
Yes. I mean, that is definitely an option. I'm hoping to have the travel lift covered sooner than
the first building.
We end up demoing that building down to put it there. However, with the travel lift building, we can move it.
Well, if we
want to, but I think I see what you're saying, that you could take one of these and put it, the travel lift cover over there to allow more.
Well, you could room. If it, not knowing what the county will allow us to do, I know that in residential settings you have to be, you can't build, I'm going to phrase that, you used to be able to not build a house within 35 foot of the center of a roadway. So that being said, if using that same deal, Lower Harbor Road, the first shop that you proposed to put up next to the corner there would be too close to that center, that easement. So that being said, we're going to have to slide everything to the ocean more. Of course, that'll mean that we can set back further from Coos Curry. If we build the first one, have Kenny move into it and then tear down that, so that way we can accommodate all this other expansion down there. Would we be better off doing that way?
It still is.
I'm just not sure yet.
Okay.
You know, it's what my main goal here that we're doing is to get the concept of a pole barn building. This is this is the amount of buildings that I would like to have out there to move our current tenants into. As we go through the permitting process, we'll be talking about this a lot more. I'm still going to have to get some surveys to figure out exactly where things are at. So as this concept gets fine-tuned, we might really need to look at our spacing. It's tight the way we have it right now. This was just done on Google Maps and using one of our other drawings. So, not saying no, I'm not saying yes, but I would like to have a travel lift shelter, four small buildings and two big buildings at the Boatyard location. Is what Dan was talking about with the front, where our the hotel across the street currently leases from us. that, the front of that building where it's at is still in good shape. So it's not something that I've fully decided if we're going to tear it down or not. You know, if there's a way we can still incorporate that, still have this and have an extra building to lease, where he leases out front there too is also where the bathroom is at for the entire boatyard. So not really wanting to go down the road of building a bathroom out there and going through the new construction of that. If we decide or we look at that we want to maybe put new metal on that building and keep it and keep the bathroom, I think at the end of the day we're going to save a lot of money not constructing a bathroom for that area. So that's still something that we'll definitely be looking at. We're not going to tear down something if we don't have to. But I don't really want to say we're not going to until we actually get into it and see what's there.
And if we do keep that bathroom, it needs a lot of work.
It will come with some work.
Yeah. We don't want to leave it like it is.
So this, to reiterate, this item C is just to give you permission to do all this research and come back to us.
It's given me a direction.
Yeah.
We've had this discussion in past meetings that's why I asked to clarify, because some commissioners thought, well, what you're approving and building all these buildings. Well,
just
we're talking
the concept, go out and research.
Concept and pole building versus metal building. Kind of the way I see it. Okay.
Okay.
Motion to approve design concept of a pole style building.
Second. Okay. Motion second, Diane.
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Action item D, the FEMA equipment building.
Okay. So we're going to quickly move into fine tuning. So our new dredge will need to be housed, store out of weather. We're going to need room to do service maintenance on it. And a building was included with the scope of work that we gave FEMA. It was included with the list of things that we were going to do with the project. We haven't moved on this because we kind of need to iron out what our boatyard is going to look like at the end. What I would like to do with this is get approval to build this, to buy this shop. It's a kit that's there's different manufacturers in Oregon that provide kits for these buildings, and this, our port staff will construct it, and that will kind of lay some groundwork for the port buildings that we're going to build. First off, if we feel comfortable building any more of them. And second of all, kind of lay the framework of how long is this going to take and what are we actually looking at as far as cost. FEMA will not pay for all of this. They're not going to pay for the utilities to the building. There is something that they're not going to cover. I don't know exactly what all those are. For the 25 by 40 building that's 16 feet tall, a budget that Gary and I put together, one of those buildings is going to be around $76,000 in an estimated budget. The kit for the buildings, the low number for that was $19,969. That's for the wood and the metal. This will also give me an opportunity to do some survey work out there and fine-tune our boatyard concept. Where everything's going to land and determine if we're actually going to need to move anything further or relocate maybe one building to make sure setbacks and things like that are met. As I said, FEMA will pay for our guys to build this. They'll pay for the wood and the metal, and it's just going to fine-tune what our design layout is going to be. For the rest of the buildings.
So $76,000 includes the kit, the concrete, and the labor.
Yes, and the budget numbers, the permits, the civil engineering, electrical. We probably want to try and put some sort of plumbing stub outs or conduits in there for anything future. know, gutters, the concrete slab. We tried to include as much of it as we can. Coos Curry Electric could be different. It depends on how much pre-infrastructure we have to do to get these things set up. I would like every single one of these buildings to have their own meters, their own electrical meters, so they can be completely separate. As a, so when a lease tenant comes in, they will be able to, you know, take over all those utility bills themselves. I'm sure there's questions.
It's a great direction, Travis. You know, those modules. So I'm picturing modules where you bring A, B, C, D together, and all you have to have someone from your team just build the scenes, and it's erected.
Yeah, and we have
it. It's a great direction.
We have the
equipment
to be able to do it. Our telehandler will be able to set all the trusses, you know, moving these lumber. We have man baskets. And we have staff knowledge of previously building these before. So I'm confident we'll be able to do it, but I think we're going to learn on any of what we should learn on this one.
What is the roof line?
The roof line?
Roof.
Yeah.
The
metal?
It's metal.
No, the
oh, it's a four pitch.
Are you going to put underlayment underneath the metal on top of the truss?
Yeah, there'll be some sort of insulation type thing that gets rolled over the top of the truss. We want to metal directly on to the wood.
If I've got three different ones, and two of them are insulated with just rolled insulation, and it works okay. The other one has OSB in there, and it is better from the perspective of insulation than the insulation, actually.
And it's probably quieter.
Yes, considerably. But it's more expensive.
Yeah. My goal with these is to obviously get them up and built as cheap as possible, you know, with the necessity to have to have. Anything beyond, you know, your standard lights, your outlets that are provided, and if we go with, you know, insulation, knowing however we're going to end up doing that, anything else will be done on it at the tenant's expense. I don't want us going into very much more other than putting up their frame, putting up the bones, and making it leasable.
But what we're talking about here is the FEMA building, so this is ours.
This is going to be one of our buildings, yes.
Right.
Well, this will be the test run.
Yeah.
This will be the test run. This will allow us to get the cost, narrow down our budget numbers, and really take a look at how the rest of these are going to get erected, time frames, and if we really still want to do it.
Well, what you're going to find out here is what kind of additional equipment. And I've seen them done two different ways. One was a crane to lift the trusses up, and the other company had a cap that sit over the top of the beam with a boat winch on it. And they just literally winched them up and set them on both sides, and then when they were done, they just cut the top of the beams off. And those two guys could handle a 24-foot truss.
Wow.
Pretty slick. So there are those kind of stuff, things out there.
Mine's 35 by 35, they used to telehandle.
No.
16-foot slide.
There will be no skylights in the roof, correct?
No skylights.
Are we going to put any kind of skylights on the wall to allow natural light in?
I don't plan on it, no.
Okay. You can put... You can put opaque plastic around the top 12 inches.
We'll talk to the manufacturer and see what they see. I know every one that I've ever seen, if it's clear, if it's white or whatever, that to allow lighting, it will look horrendous in a very short amount of time. If we can make up by maybe putting in two extra lights, you know, instead of having four or six, have six or eight lights in there to brighten it up a little bit, maybe that's an option.
You can also put windows in the door.
Windows in the door,
yeah. You can put, I think mine's got three and a 12-foot door. And they're up here in the box. And it does provide light.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we'll, as of right now, no. There will be no extra that. It's going to be wall metal straight up to the top and then, you know, one metal across the top. So it just keeps it simple, easy. And, you know, and if a tenant comes and says they want more light, I mean, I know you can go through, you can take off one piece of metal and they can propose it and maybe the board will approve them doing it themselves. But at this point, I would rather them all look nice, clean, uniform, and the same.
And stack them up as close as we are, there's, you're pretty much going to get no sunlight, in, especially in the metal buildings. But my concern was the skylight. They leak like a, over a period of time.
Yeah, there's no skylight. It'll be a little bit of a dungeon, but we'll give them a couple of extra lights to brighten it up.
Nice building.
So FEMA, we will have to submit to them and get reimbursed.
Yes, this will be the same thing. We'll expend the costs, and they will reimburse us.
Okay. Any further? Motion
to approve the purchase of a 25 by 40 foot shop building for FEMA equipment.
Second. Okay, motion and second, Danielle.
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Action item E, the Outlook Coffee Stand lease agreement.
Okay. Mr. Hazen, the owner of Outlook Coffee, came in and spoke with me about his current lease and having some difficult times with as far as business coming to there. He asked for any type of consideration on his lease. He did write a letter to the board members that's attached. I do have his lease agreement attached with this. This one's kind of a tough one. There's multiple motions that I put on here for consideration. Kind of wanted to leave this open for some discussion and let you guys discuss on how or what, if anything, we decide to do with this. Is there any conversation?
I'll go.
Go ahead.
Personal opinion, I don't think they're going to make it no matter what they do, but that's besides the point. The space is not desirable to rent. We know that, but I can't see us going down on the rent anymore while they're there. Adjusting their lease 6 month or monthly during the summer, I could see adjusting that. The other thing is I'd like to make sure that when they are not paying rent, they're equipment is removed to avoid attractive nuisances, and if it's gone, we could rent it if we needed to. So that's where I stand.
All right. Well, if they were to leave their equipment there, it'd be like giving them
free
storage.
Right.
And also reducing their rate or their lease because things are slow or not, they're not making the money they need to. We have a lot of other tenants that have the same situation. So it's like either we make it so that food trucks and things are only going to be in the port at X amount a month, and that way maybe it would work better in the community and it wouldn't be like favoritism to one company.
And their rent's already reduced, right? I mean, if you were to rent that space out as an RV space, mm-hmm. they're getting a significantly reduced rate already.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I agree with Sharon that I think that this is the place where we may want to consider a seasonal lease for mobile business. And, you know, seasonal being from March 1st to October 31st or something like mm-hmm. that, with the requirement that they move them off-season. And I think that, I mean, we're kind of going into an area we haven't done before, and I don't want to open up this can of worms here, but these are not mobile businesses, these are permanent businesses. So we're talking now something that food truck, coffee stand, bait shop, whatever it is, if it's on wheels, it can be moved, and that would fit a mobile concessionaire lease, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But, you know, we all, I think all of us knew that this wasn't going to work year-round. Nothing like that works year-round here, with few exceptions. So I think a seasonal kind of approach is better for everybody.
And establishing something for the food trucks, because we would like to do that in the future. At least it would set the ground for future people that we may designate an area to do that. They would have the same situation.
Well, and if you establish your business and people come year-round, we could say, okay, well, if you want to rent it year-round, we probably could, but we don't have to get locked into that at this point.
One other thing that I've thought a little bit about, I haven't discussed it with anybody else yet, but making that site just a monthly lease. You come in, you sign up, you prepay for your month, you can go out there for a month and it opens the door. If, you know, it doesn't put anybody out too far, and it will also maybe entice other people to come if it's just monthly and nobody's getting too deep into a lease or, you know, bad years. It's, you know, it's open. You could probably put up to two different food trucks in there, you know, at different times. It could be different. But just doing a monthly lease on the space and only allowing them up to a month, and then, you know, if there's other people signed up, it would be a different issue if we had them lined up at the door, which I guess that would be a good problem to have for us. You know, if you have 10 people that are wanting to come in there, we could adjusting, but possibly looking at only leasing that spot, or, you know, doing an agreement, not even a lease, for a 1 month time to be there, instead of trying to get one person to be there for a set amount of time.
Every time we write this paperwork up, we use the attorney. So if you do it every month, geez.
I'm just thinking of an easier way to still offer it, but not narrowing it all the time down to a lease, you know, for that spot, and not having so many contractual things to go through, an agreement. You know, if you want to try it for a winter month or a summer month, you could, but that's just another option I was thinking about.
I would probably condition my thoughts on that depending on how much we have to put in. I mean, if we have to build infrastructure for some of these things, and I don't know what they take, but I know they're going to take power. And I'm thinking now, not in the RV park, but on a remote site, if we wanted to develop it, then I'd be pretty goosey about a monthly lease. But for what we're doing here, which is just park your thing there, and I guess they plug in the power.
Correct. We only have one power source for that spot, right?
One power source. So there's a 50-amp and a 30-amp that's available there, and a 110. So if you were to get more than one in there, you would be limited to a 50-amp and a 30-amp. You wouldn't be able to have two 50-amp rigs in there.
Well, the only other person, correct me if I'm wrong, please, that has expressed interest in doing anything in that RV park was a mobile ice cream truck that wanted to drive through the park last year.
Yeah. That's the only other person that's ever approached us. So it's definitely a unique position that's over there. It's not like any of our other leases. I'm not a huge proponent of messing with the lease language. I don't like a reduction of rate. I think it's going to make it very difficult for us in future negotiations if we go down that road. If we could approve, you know, you could approve if he just wants to end his lease, and then we spend the next couple months figuring out how or way we can entertain a future lease or agreement there, and come up with kind of a different avenue or route to work with that space over there. But it would require him suspending the current lease and moving out of there until we come up with a different type of arrangement.
Well, I don't think we really have a problem with letting him out of this lease, do we?
I don't. I think that's, out of anything, probably the cleanest way to
just
go.
Just let him out of his lease, have him remove his stuff, and then we'll reevaluate when he or anybody else wants to come back in there. Do a month-to-month with a boilerplate agreement. Fill in the name, time span, and if they're in there for 30 days, the next 30 days, they get first choice.
If they want to continue.
Yeah.
You know, something like that, I think, will leave us with more latitude to figure out what works for us over there. But that's my opinion on it.
He has paid his lease through the end of this month, so if he made a decision like that today, that would give him time to either move the cart or...
Well, it would give him an option.
Know,
you know,
he's paid through December 31st right now.
We would be approving the option for him to cancel his lease. You know, I'm not 100% on his entire position, given what our decision is.
So right now, all we have to do is really decide if we were willing to let him out of his lease or not let him out of his lease. Let him out of his lease, let him remove his stuff, and that's all we have to do today. Right?
Yes.
So how do we approach trailer? They're staying there. Obviously, they're not leasing anything. Are they signing temporary use agreement type thing?
They agree to our park rules and regulations,
right,
terms and conditions, and they make their reservation saying that they'll be in their power, or so many people or follow these rules. But
we don't have to get into too much because of our state limit.
Yeah, because we have a short...
I would like to base what we're going to do here off of something more like a lease use agreement rather than a lease, so we don't get in the lease language. And as Larry said, we could print up a form that says, you know, company fill in the blanks is going to use this space for so much for this period, and just make it pretty simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would give us time. If we did something like that, it would give me time to figure out what we're going to require of them, you know, to be able to do that. What type of insurance, what the details of them being there so we're protected, and obviously they are too.
We want to have some kind of language in there, something that says if you do this, it constitutes abandonment of your whatever you have.
Yeah, I would have to work with James. We'd have to get kind of creative, or, you know, to also look and see. One of the things I would do, I guess, right out of the gate would be look at other places that have food trucks that lease or rent them spaces or whatever, and see if we can get our hands on any existing agreements that we kind of like the language on.
I'm thinking that I saw at least one food truck at Winchester Bay.
I know Lincoln City has a whole spot for them. I think there's got lots of different applications. You know, there's food trucks are a pretty popular thing. They got them in Gold Beach even up there. So I think if we were to do a little homework, we could come up with some examples and, like you said, kind of a boilerplate that everybody's kind of happy with that works, and maybe try a different avenue with this versus one tenant for a year long that's going to have to kind of suffer through the ups and downs.
Yeah, I'll see if the RV park, but it's nothing's happening there now.
When you're looking at that, Travis, I know that talking to some of the tenants, their business, some of the businesses are down as much as 20% from revenue from last year. So I understand their pain. But that space in the RV park that we provide, or that we're currently providing, as with all of the tenants that park over there for the week or 2 weeks or whatever our maximum allows them to, we provide them electricity in there when they're space rent. I take it we're doing the same thing for this concession stand that we have. We're providing them electricity. We do we charge any extra for that electricity while they're in there?
No, right now it's just kind of based upon our average, what we make on those sites every year. So our front row sites, granted this is information from, I think, about 2 years ago, but they're about $10,000 a year we make on each front row site. So kind of taking that number, that's why we sliced, we went to $500 a month. So we're still gaining not as much revenue as we would want to, but we're still gaining something off that spot. And the problem with that spot is its location after we did our restructuring of where it is, how close it is to the bathroom, and the inability to get in and out of it, you know, unless you significantly reduce the size of RV that uses it. So it's another thing that kind of incentivizes us that it's not a desirable spot to rent. So accepting a little bit less on that was kind of my game plan with it, that we're still going to be getting some sort of revenue and not just having an empty spot. That kind of answered your question.
It kind of does. I mean, basically, we're not charging. They're getting free electricity.
Yes, it's all included. Same, similar as if you rent a spot, you know, from us. You come in, you pay, you get water, sewer, and electrical. And I did talk with Kelly about the STC fees and, you know, moving, you know, a type of food truck type thing into it. She said that being that site is typically for an RV and their uses, it was a wash. So that's that part of it. But yes, everything's included in what they have there.
Okay.
And it makes it really easy for us. We don't have any way to measure the electrical usage on these meters either. So one package deal is easier on us for paperwork.
But chime in. Doesn't have to be a food truck. Doesn't have to be a coffee truck. You know, listen, Ford has a good rep with the bar center up here. Maybe you are down here every year. Maybe there's a couple of people who don't care too much about a month piece on it, who would like to demonstrate or show off their artwork there. You know, so I'd reach your hand out and see, you know, if you're going to terminate this guy's lease, see if anyone wants to pick it up from the art center.
Right. Yeah. Right now, what we've historically found, probably why it was sold to begin with, and what we always see over there is that the winter months over there are difficult. I mean, we have next to no occupancy for as far as RVs. And, you know, one of the things that Theodore did bring up, you know, with it too, is that even when you have it there, have a food truck or whatever you have there, even if it was enticing, there's no place for them to go. You know, if it's raining now, and then you want a coffee, when you get your rain, there's no shelter, there's no cover, which makes it unpredictable at best during the winter months.
Yep. Anybody that lives here realizes that.
So kind of way I'm looking at this, and I'm just summarizing now, is that we offer him the ability to cancel his lease, and we can get back to him at our other options once the board's had more time to come up with more of a month-to-month agreement or a different agreement that fits us better. I won't nail it down to that, but a different agreement that fits us better. Or, unfortunately, he has to abide by the terms of the lease that he's currently got.
Okay.
If that works. Richard, you're...
I'm writing a motion.
You're writing quick over there, so.
He's writing a motion. Very
to,
detailed.
Kind of captured everything that we're talking about. So
right.
That's clear.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, want me to try it?
Yes.
All right. I move that we deal with Mr. Hazen to terminate his lease on December 31st. Instruct the manager to develop a use agreement for mobile concessions on port property. This action is done with the understanding that Mr. Hazen will have first choice to resume in that spot should he choose under a new agreement.
Good. Second. Good job.
Question before we go to vote, is that going to be under the management's discretion to make that a month to month? It's not written in your motion that I heard.
Well, what we've instructed him to do is to develop some sort of a use agreement for mobile concessions. So we should consider that on a month-to-month space, I suspect.
And what I'll do is I would come up with a new agreement, a different term that fits kind of what we discussed, and then it'll be put on a board meeting for further discussion. If it's going to be an agreement that we're going to live to, it'll come back to you guys for approval.
Will we need a resolution on that new term as well?
If we like the way it is and that's the agreement that we want to use and we're comfortable with it, it would be a good idea to do one.
Thank you.
But that would come after we kind of felt good about what we were doing.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Any further? Okay. I have a motion second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Sam?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Agenda item F, the HMGP standard form.
Okay. This form is something that needs to be signed that goes hand in hand with our HMGP funding. It's a requirement to have this to access their funding. It is... It requires an authorized certified official to sign, so that's why we're here. This goes over all of the, will comply with all the acts, the Clean Water Acts, and you know, all the way down to Trafficking Victims Protection Act. So it lists over 20 different, we will comply for funding. I'm not going to read all
of these. But you're comfortable with it.
Yes, this is just another form that has to be signed for us to build access HMGP funding. It is all, we will comply with all the state and federal regulations. They do have a catch-all that I found when I was reading it, which was number 19. We'll comply with all applicable requirements of all other federal laws, executive orders, regulations, and policies governing this program. I don't know why they didn't have a last, but it seemed like a good catch-all.
Who's their sign?
Motion to approve the court manager to sign the standard form. I can sign it. I just have to have court.
It's important
to sign a certified official signature.
We have flood insurance?
I think we have some sort of amount of flood insurance.
Oh, yeah. I'm just curious because that's one of them. I thought that like, well, we're...
We have it, but it's kind of worthless.
It's
not very, it's not very much covers when you're in the port zone. But I think there are some situations or circumstances that could come up where it could be used inside buildings, you know, bursted pipes, things like that. But exterior flooding, especially natural disasters,
no,
we're not in that scope.
Okay. Any further?
Nope. Motion to approve port manager to sign standard form 4242D required for HMGP funding. I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion second.
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Okay. Information item A, community listening session in Bandit.
Okay, so I got an email from Senator David Brock Smith that they were holding a community listening session in Bandon last month. They asked for us to give an update on our FEMA and wastewater treatment plant projects and an update on our infrastructure needs. I had about a week to put something together, so that's why we didn't talk about it in a previous board meeting about what we kind of wanted or what we would maybe want to bring up. So I picked the travel lift ramp attached. This is something Gary and I put together to present to Senator David Brock Smith, Senate President Rob Wagner, and Representative Court Boyce. We were there with a variety of different community leaders from hospitals, schools, ports, cities, counties. So there was about 30 people there or so. We went through, we told them that we were doing great. You know, things are moving ahead very positive. Our wastewater treatment plant is going. We had already begun work on our FEMA project. And our infrastructure needs was our travel lift ramp. Our travel lift ramp is something that currently right now is serving, we're the only boat haul out facilities in about 100 miles each way of us. So it is something that's in our strategic plan and things that we've looked at, you know, that we eventually are going to need a new boat lift ramp. So we put this for our infrastructure need.
Yes.
Kind of an update. If there's any questions about it, it was just kind of a big group sitting just like this, and they said, you go, and you said what you had your couple minutes, and they moved on to somebody else. So I just wanted to let everybody know that I did go to that, and that's what I presented there.
Well, we thank you for doing that.
Yeah. Okay, information item B, the DEQ 1200Z stormwater test results.
Okay, so these were our most recent results. We continue to do improve with our stormwater quality. The boatyard copper levels exceeded the requirements. We are already in tier two with that pollutant along with some others that are still in there. And they're called out in our Tier 2 plan, which is what we asked for an extension to implement our Tier 2 corrective action for another year. And our oil-water separator should clean up the boatyard the rest of the way. I would imagine it's going to significantly increase our compliance. So, wanted to let you guys know where we were at with that. This was our third of four. Did we do our fourth one?
Yeah,
we have not yet. And so we did our fourth one for this year, and we haven't got our results. We'll get you those results.
Travis, when is the oil-water separators plan to be installed?
Before the end of the year is what my goal is to do it. I've been waiting for the board to approve the purchase of two oil water separators with the state and local fiscal recovery funds. The only reason I haven't purchased those or pulled that trigger yet is because of waiting on the FEMA reimbursements, because we're pretty extended with our finances with that right now. But I'm probably going to order them by March, and then, because even if we got them right now, I don't think we'd be able to dig in the ground without hitting water relatively quickly right now. So it's kind of more of a summer project. And we have until September to actually implement these. So September is my drop dead deadline to have those things installed. But I hope to have them done before the end of our fiscal year.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a question on the, you know, you're having that problem with pollution in there. Are we going to get something from the spoils pile? Is that going to affect our readouts?
Not from the spoils pile. I don't anticipate. We've already done all of our water testing, so we won't be testing that again until January, late January.
I know when you pick that stuff up, it's your smells, and you can,
the smell of that is organic breakdown is what that is, and we tested all those spots where they're at right now, and there's no contaminants that are in that area. We have no contaminants.
So when are they going to remove the spoils?
The county IGA that we have also includes the county removing those spoils, so I kind of put them on notice to have it out by February. It needs time to dry.
Yeah,
and get that water to come out.
That mess will be gone. You know?
I'm hoping by February.
All right, thank you.
Okay. That brings us to information item C, the trouble with filter.
Okay. So I kind of just wanted to bring this up to you guys, let you guys kind of look at it, and I'll be bringing more back to you in the future. But this is what I have kind of picked out for our travel lift cover. We went over it in the proposed design concept. The Connex boxes that you see here at the bottom will be provided via the dredge that we purchased. The big top shelter, the cover that we have picked out sitting on top of these will give us the height that we need. It also allows for us to move the Connex boxes out each way in the event that we look at a bigger travel lift at some point. It'll still house a bigger travel lift. We have currently spent almost $92,000 in travel lift maintenance through its life so far, which is 7 years. I would credit 30% of those costs and repairs due to weather deterioration. So this is, we'll be bringing this back to you guys more for approval, but I wanted to show you guys this, get any comments, feedback on what you guys think about the big top shelter design.
The cover is a tent type thing, plastic or
it's
whatever.
A canvas tent, and I got this idea from Toledo. Toledo has one of these, and it's really big. It'll house about three of our travelers in it, and it's just anchored down with concrete blocks. I asked them about wind. Is it blow over? You know, is the wind just going to walk? They said they have never had a problem with it. And the canvas tops, they just send somebody up and down with pressure washer every once in a while. They hold up really well.
My only comment is get it under the cover.
Yeah, it desperately needs to be done, and it's going to save us money in the long run and preserve that machine.
Information item D, boardwalk repairs.
So with this one, the last meeting we discussed the continued failure of the boardwalk. The deck was detached from the piles and slid back against the retaining wall. The underlying cause of the damage will continue to develop over time, which is the shoring failing. This is only a temporary fix to stop the destruction of what's going on. New deck planks, 45 new boards and hand railing will be reinstalled, and it will be reopened for the summer. As I said before, I talked to Jack. Jack was out. He's looked at it, and he wants us to continue monitoring it. We have discussed a future fix for this in the event that the shoring continues to fail and we don't have the funds to do it, is driving steel I-beams down behind the shoring and creating a steel support structure behind the shoring that will stop the failure of the boardwalk. It'll let the shoring fail on its own without destroying the boardwalk as well. I'm looking at that way because we can do that incrementally coming down. It's not in water work period. And it's just a current plan before we drive any H piles or do anything like that. Of course, we'll discuss it with you guys and go over it. But the reality of finding funding to replace our boardwalk and the shoring is not looking good right now. And to hit both of those projects to happen at the same time, I don't have very good confidence in that happening at all. So we've been looking at it. We have got it stopped from continuing to tear off down the boardwalk, and we are starting to get a plan to fix it, to preserve the boardwalk, not the shoring. The shoring is another animal for another day.
Do we know how deep that shoring currently goes down into the ground?
No. I have no idea.
I know things have never been done here according to plans.
Well, there's drawings that show that how the construction was supposed to be done. There are things in there that were supposed to be done that shouldn't have been done or are different from what the intended plan was. But that's
another story.
Yes.
Okay, the last item is Curry County Transit Lodging Tax.
Okay, I just wanted to let you guys know too, I went to a Curry County public meeting and I gave a public comment about the travel lodging tax. This is something that was brought to my attention a month ago, how the current tax dollars were being spent, how the county has allocated it, and it was significantly different from what I knew and what the voters had originally approved. So I did type up a public comment. I did present it to the commissioners, and we will kind of leave this alone for now and see if any changes happen. But my feeling is that the amount contributed from the port and our South County area, all the contributors really to Curry County, really haven't seen enough as far as tourism promotion or investment in the tourism-related facilities. Is there any questions on that?
How much do you figure that South County has contributed to this tax, to this plan?
They're in the neighborhood of 60 to 65% of total funds come from South County alone. The port to date from May of 2019 to now has paid $172,000 to the TLT fund. And to my knowledge, we haven't seen any of that come back as far as infrastructure upgrades or promotions directly related to us. Now I know 35% of this money does go to the Curry County Economic Development for tourism promotion. I just don't myself see that promotion coming from the port. I know they advertise like our Pirates Festival, you know, some of the things that we have here. All things considered, I don't feel it's enough. So I asked for them to look at the current spending. Right now, 35% goes to Curry County Economic Development, 35% goes to the Curry County Fair Board, and 30% goes to the Curry County Sheriff's Department. For being as contributors, we are just on the Lower Harbor Road. My letter just kind of outlines what the current contributions are, what the voters voted on, and that we're not at that point where we're seeing a return back for what we're paying.
Thank you for doing that. It was quite upsetting when I heard about it.
Yeah, I know the county is actively working through many different deals right now. I know some of the money that's going to the Fair Board right now is being talked about. So I felt like we said what we had to say, and we let the county commissioners see what they end up doing with it.
I hope they get back with you on that.
Yeah, if you hear anything from me.
Yep, I will keep you up to date on any changes on that.
Okay, that brings us to commissioner's comments.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Everybody have a happy and safe.
That's about all I got for now.
All right, I will just comment briefly about, I told you I'm in this working group on offshore wind, and so we met last week, and we have a subgroup now that is working on economic development, so I'm writing the port stuff. And the intent of this is to come up with a kind of a template to convey to the governor's office about how a roadmap guiding offshore wind development might be done. So the notion is that the state will put together this roadmap of what are called exit ramps on it and kind of work through the issues. So exit ramps might be the port's not capable of handling some of this stuff, for example. And some of the criteria that I used, I looked at nominal dredge depth, channel width, turning basin size. I looked at the loading dock capacity, the lifting capacity of whatever stuff we have here, fuel storage, fueling availability over the dock. Those are all things that we have to be evaluated at both Tuesday and here. We wrote off we told them that Bandon and Gold Beach would not be suitable for any activity within the call area. So, but this is just general criteria, but that's moving forward, and I don't know when we're going to be done, probably in March. Okay.
Yeah.
You'll
have to bring that back to us.
When we finally see the final product, we'll let you know.
Will we still be alive?
Yeah, they're fast-tracking this, because they want this before the next legislative session, which is a short session, so it's going to be quick.
Okay,
the next regular meeting will be, ready for this, Wednesday, January 17, 2024, at 2 o'clock. And with that, we will adjourn.
Goodbye.